Do you feel like you're lacking a little bit of sense in the world? Do you feel like maybe things aren't adding up? You feel like maybe I need to go back and read like the World Book Encyclopedia and figure out what's really going on? No, you don't need to do any of that. You can just go to Common Sense Ohio. That was as cheesy as it gets right there. All right, it is Cinco de Mayo, Common Sense Ohio. You can check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com for all the backlog of episodes, to leave a comment, to ask a question, do whatever. And as always, we are brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. What is that? Well, they're accounting.
They're accounting.
They do an account. They do our accounting. They could do yours. You know, it's funny. My books are already done. I'm done. I filed my taxes. We did it all on time. And they're already bugging me to start planning for the year. They get this thing. It says sign up for each quarter for an appointment so you can start planning your future. I wouldn't do it except for that. That's why I have Harper Plus Accounting on my side. They could be on yours too. This day in history, Cinco de Mayo, as it turns out. And I know what everybody's going to say. You're going to talk about the Spanish beating the French. Everybody knows that. I have no idea what the hell happened. I know it's Cinco de Mayo and it's like a little, we'll call it an alcohol holiday. But really what happened in North Bend, Ohio on May 5, 1865, 15 to 20 armed men commit the first train robbery in U.S. history. Apparently, that's down by Cincinnati. You're neck of the
sure. Head. Yeah, North Bend. Absolutely.
Did I say North Bend or South Bend?
You said North Bend.
I meant North Bend. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And you said that.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So the first train robbery occurred in 1865. Apparently, they took off, or these robbers dismantled part of the track. It goes off the rails, and they robbed everybody. The bandits removed a section of the rail, forcing the train to derail. Passengers robbed. Robbers used an axe and gunpowder to open safes in the bag. I mean, right out of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid type stuff.
Wow.
And it happened here in Ohio.
What year again, please?
1865. They think they were former Civil War bandits.
You know, wow.
Like hold on, like the outlaw Josie Wales type holdouts.
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that is. I never heard that before.
Yep, I didn't either until I
fascinating.
Got it today. So anyway, that is your factoid of the day. We should probably hit the news because lots and lots.
Yeah, this is besides Cinco de Mayo, this is also primary day in across the country with states like Indiana and Ohio, and I'm sure several others going to decide, you know, various local issues and statewide issues. And so this is a big day in general. Lots going on nationally. I thought, obviously, while our show was gone, you know, the White House correspondence dinner assassin situation happened with that Cole Thomas Allen, who took a train, again, we're talking about trains, came all the way from California by train so he could bring his arsenal with him, I guess, on board the train. I guess you don't go through a magnetometer like you do in an airport, interestingly enough.
That is interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, you could definitely cause trouble on a train. And as Mr. Penny in New York City knows, you can get in trouble if you intervene, too. But at any rate, came all the way across the country to case out the Hilton in Washington, D.C., got a room. They have him on video checking things out the night before. And then yesterday there was an event, a confrontation between the U.S. Secret Service and the Metropolitan Police in D.C. With a gunman near the Washington Monument. And five shots. He took when he was ordered to stop because they saw a gun on him. He turned around and shot at the Secret Service. They returned fire and injured him. He had to go to the hospital. And I guess one of his bullets, when he shot at the Secret Service, grazed a child. And child's okay.
I mean, this is.
But something's going on here where we've normalized.
Well.
Like killing people.
I mean, look, we talked about this a few weeks ago, like the Hassan Piker, like these guys are okay with it. And, you know, like the
healthcare executive Mangione, right.
It's like somehow it's okay to kill people.
And they indicted the former head of the FBI this past week, James Comey,
yep.
for putting on his Facebook or posting on his podcast, whatever, some kind of platform. He claimed he stumbled across some seashells that said 8647. And then he claimed he didn't. So he thought it was interesting enough to put out there on his platform. But then now he's claiming he didn't know what it meant.
Yeah,
which,
that's nonsense. Right?
Come on, that's nonsense.
I think that having defended lots of people for doing lots of stupid things, his better defense would be, I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
86 just meant get rid of him. It didn't mean kill him. I mean, because he probably didn't want somebody to go kill Trump. So here's what I think, and this is maybe a good jumping off point because I wanted to have this discussion about it. There's a difference. We can't go too far either, because what we don't want is the government boot on our jugular, impinging our right to free speech.
Yeah.
So there's this line that gets crossed.
Right.
Like fighting words or
right.
inciting to violence or whatever that would be.
Right.
And we got to be careful with this because it's really easy on if you're taking up a torch, you've taken up a cause. If you want to say, look, if you're a Trump supporter and you say we want to take all these guys out, whoever even got close to threatening Trump, you got to be careful not to go too far and impinge upon people's right of free speech because guess what? Next time it's you, and you're going to end up in the same boat. On the other hand, somehow the culture has to change. I mean, we've got this. We have fostered some environment here, like you said. Like, what's going on out there? Why is it okay to want to go kill executives in healthcare because you feel like you're getting shorted somehow? Like, why is that okay? It's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not. It's not okay.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the most basic, you know, whatever legal system you want to talk about, whether it's the Code of Hammurabi or the Ten Commandments or our own, you know, state and federal codes, the most basic thing is you can't kill other people. I mean,
that's shalt not kill.
That's right? Like number one on the rule book.
But you know, it's all, and what's even more disturbing really is it's all about this goal of quote equity. So it's like, we think the system is rigged against us so we can go kill people. So, it's revolution is what it is. And it's a Marxist revolution.
Yeah.
And I think we're living the beginning of it.
Yeah. We take people's conscientious objections to killing so seriously that back like in the Vietnam and World War II eras, when you got drafted, if you were a conscientious objector and believed, like Sergeant York in World War I actually believed that the proscription against killing took it so seriously that said, you know, even if German soldiers are shooting at me or the Viet Cong in Vietnam are shooting at me, I'm not going to shoot back. Thou shalt not kill. And for people who, that's how we used to look at that proscription against killing so seriously that we allowed even army draftees to have an alternate path where they could be ambulance, you know, drivers or they could be medics or whatever. And there have been conscientious objector medics who have gotten the Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
That's how seriously we take that. And now we have a culture that kind of like casually like, kill them.
And it almost always seems to be younger people. Because I don't think they have a concept. They don't quite yet have an understanding of what it really means.
Yeah.
It's like the old Clint Eastwood. It's a hell of a thing, killing a man, taking everything he's got.
Everything he's going to have.
Somehow it's been normalized or at least accepted, and these guys are becoming martyrs. Like Mangione, I mean, these guys are going to go spend the rest of his life. If he doesn't get executed, he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. It's no good life for him, and it's no good life for the guy he took, for the life he took. I mean, it's like, you just don't want it to happen. I'm not saying don't punish the guy. I'm saying, look, you people out there encouraging this or are okay with it, you're ruining lots of lives in the wake of your stupidity.
Yeah. And, you know,
coming from somebody who's defended criminals for 31 years, right?
I guess, you know, this is what a lot, you know, and I'm not trying to slide into this debate, but this is what a lot of the anti-abortion people have been saying for the last 75 years is that, if you allow things like, killing off the elderly, if you allow things like abortion, if you normalize the ending of human life in other areas, you make murder like less of a big deal, because it's just, you're just, all you're doing is ending another life that would have ended anyway. So,
and it's so bizarre.
It's bizarre to me, totally.
And it's not like there's a theological ideology behind it, thinking, all right, look,
it's nihilism.
We have an afterlife.
Yeah.
So take, like, it's not like that. And look, this is no justification for killing him, but I believe in after. Look, I'm very strong on my beliefs. But you could almost see if somebody, some loon would say, look, I'm going to kill you, but you're okay, Norm, because you're going to have a great afterlife.
Yeah.
These people don't even believe in that.
No, they're nihilists.
They just want to put you in the dirt.
Yeah.
And they think that you don't deserve to live.
To live.
Because they have somehow been slighted by society.
Right.
Or their cause is so important that they should kill. And it's not unlike what we're seeing elsewhere. You know, we were talking off the air about this, our concern that somebody's going to try to pack the court after this decision. Maybe I'm jumping ahead, but
yeah,
it's the same kind of thing. Give me all the power and I'll fix it all.
Yeah.
You know, I'll fix it all for you.
Yeah.
And you can justify anything that way.
Yeah. On our show, we talked about this after the, the Pennsylvania assassination attempt, where Trump was shot in the head. You know, the bullet went through his ear. If he had turned his head, you know, a split second this way or that way, his head would have been blown off. And at the time, I recall you saying, Steve, and Brett was on the show, we were all talking about the rhetoric. You know, if you keep calling somebody Hitler, and if you keep calling them, a threat to democracy, and, you know, an existential, you know, it's the end of the country that this guy is president, and you keep talking in these exaggerated, over-the-top ways, then marginalized people like this Cole Thomas Allen from California that took this train ride from coast to coast in order to try to kill President Trump, you trigger people who are just on the fringe and maybe think like, like Lincoln's assassin, you know, like I'm doing something good for the country. You know, I'm killing a tyrant. He actually said that Wilkes Booth, when he jumped on stage, you know, that's what you do to tyrants.
Yeah.
And he thought he'd be a celebrity. He thought the next day the newspapers would be joyous in praising him for killing Lincoln.
Well, and then you wonder.
It's the same kind of sickness.
It is. But I think it's like, it is only magnified and exacerbated by the fact that people aren't out there living anymore. It's all, you know, staring like this at their screens. They don't go out there and, as they say, touch the grass anymore. Like, there's no human interaction.
And more to the point, Steve, they're even playing killing games. Like, that is what they do. Like, you're sitting there for an hour blowing up depictions of soldiers or zombies or whatever the hell, aliens.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're just killing stuff.
Maybe that connects, maybe it doesn't.
That Cole Thomas Allen, one of his things was developing video games.
I'll be interested to see if that connects. But I guess the point I'm making is a little bit different. It's
okay.
You don't have any interpersonal interaction.
I got you.
Okay. And if I don't talk to you face to face, we come down here and we spend, 30 minutes before the show just bullshitting about
agreeing and disagreeing.
Agreeing and disagreeing about things, you know, what
like adults should do.
What are you up to? What are you doing in your personal,
And tolerating our disagreements.
Yes.
Like, that's what mature people do.
But if you don't ever have that interaction, if your experience on human interaction is confined to chat rooms, Facebook posts, Instagram, Snapchat.
Your bubble.
And then that gets even relegated to like only people who are radical and agree with you on whatever it is.
Yeah. Then you're in an echo chamber.
It's sort of like the Charlie Kirk killer. It's like it becomes really easy then to take that next step and say, I'm just going to do it. And then it's sort of like.
And he stood for dialogue. That's what Charlie Kirk was all about.
Right.
Look, you totally disagree with me. I'm on campus. Let's talk about,
And like how many movies, how many historical scenes, like Wilkes Booth is a perfect example. It's like he thought everybody's going to be proud of him because he was only hanging out in that little subset of lunatics that thought it was cool to go kill the president.
Yeah.
And it's the same. And the problem is that little pool, it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
And these people think they're heroes. And then you've got people in media actually celebrating it. You know, now, the last time they tried to kill Trump or whoever tried to kill Trump in Pennsylvania, And there was two others, one in Mar-a-Lago, and then somebody else got shot at Mar-a-Lago, I think in February. I don't know what he was doing there. But
Guy in the bushes you're talking about?
The guy in the bushes, and then there was another one.
Oh. I forgot about the fourth one.
I don't know that Trump was there, but certainly, anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, what, I lost my train of thought now, but you know what, you just sort of have to wonder, oh, I know I was going to tell you. We have, when the first one happened, there was a huge backlash against the celebrities, the politicians,
right,
the media for sort of celebrating, you know, too bad he missed. There were stupid comments. I know Jack Black's band, whatever that is, the guy that is in his band famously for his birthday said he wanted to hit Trump next time or something. So he got run out. But this time there's a lot of that going on, but there's no cancellation. In other words, that's becoming normalized.
It's becoming normalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a scary thought.
I saw where James Carville said something like, I want him to die, but I want him to die slowly because I want him to suffer. And you're just like, you were a counselor to Bill Clinton, another president. Like, how do you talk like that? Like, what's wrong with you?
And if you have any question about your cause, like if you think this is all cool, you have any question, I've done this my entire life, mostly since I became a professional lawyer because we're just brainwashed into thinking this way. What if they were talking about your gem or your hero, Obama, or somebody
right.
you really liked?
Right.
What if you were doing it? Like, then what?
Yeah.
Because next time, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want people taking shots at Obama.
Oh, God, no.
I don't want people taking shots at Trump.
No.
I don't want people taking shots at me.
No.
Or your mother or your father or your loved one or whoever. Like, if you're not cool with it, if you think that you're so self-righteous or you're so bright and your cause is so just that you can kill the other side, think again.
Yeah, you're really off. I was heartened. You know, I struggle with one of my favorite musicians is Bruce Springsteen. I love his music. I've been very disappointed in, you know, disappointed in his forays into politics. But I have to say, he came out after the White House correspondence thing and said, thank God the president's okay.
Good for him.
And, you know, and I thought, you know, finally, you know, can somebody say something that's grown up? And Bruce did, and I'm glad he did that, you know, and he can go ahead and have his political opinions. It's disappointing to me, but that's okay. You know, I still like his music, but good for him, like you say. And I wish other celebrities would follow that kind of, like, bring the tone down. We're all, at the end of the day, we all want Americans to do well. We want most of the same things.
Well, these people don't a lot, but the fringe do. They,
but
they
the
do,
fringe do
they
not.
They do not. They don't want our country to win. They don't want our country to succeed.
No.
And now that is becoming a normal part of our existence.
Yeah. There's
people that are rooting against us because we are just rotten to the core.
Yeah.
In their opinion, that we have never done anything good, that the system is so unequal that they should. You know, it sounds a lot like, you know, the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, it's like opposite day on Seinfeld or something.
Right.
Well, let's talk about you brought up the Supreme Court decision tangentially. You brought that up, and let's wade into that. So a rather epic decision by the Supreme Court of the United States, 6-3 decision with the usual team splitting 6-3, on a Louisiana redistricting actually law that they passed, a plan passed, and they knocked it down. They said that because it was drafted on the basis of skin color, on race, that it was unconstitutional. And it's the reverberations of that as it affects the Virginia plan, the Florida plan, the plans that Ohio has in place, and obviously the Louisiana plan. I think the next day the governor said, well, okay, they struck down the law, so we're going to revert back to the independent board or whatever mechanism they have in Louisiana. We're going to revert to that plan. And basically, as I understand it, Steve, and I'm using big fat fingers here, so I'm sure I'm not as elegant as Samuel Alito, who wrote the majority opinion, but essentially, from what I understand, is the new standard for what is acceptable gerrymandering. And make no mistake, gerrymandering will continue. That's not what the Supreme Court knocked down. They didn't say you have to, you know, draw straight lines and use a grid, and those are congressional districts. What they said, my understanding, is that districts may not be formed for any kind of discriminatory purpose.
Yeah, so you can't create a district full of a certain minority.
Yes.
Based on and just
to get an outcome.
To get, well, that, but that's not why they're doing it.
To drive an outcome.
But that's that doesn't matter.
That's right.
What you can't do is say expressly, we are going to create this district full of black or brown people.
Right.
Just because.
Right.
Because we're going to draw the amoeba around the state just because they're, that way this will be a district only based on race.
And of course, many districts were also drawn to mainly include white people. With the thesis being, that'll be a red district, and this over here will be a blue district.
Right, right. And so, you know, gerrymandering itself is as old as the hills, right? That's been going
even
on
before even before gerrymander was a word.
Yeah.
They were gerrymandering.
The people were drawing up districts. Those in power draw up districts to try to keep it, and those on the other side do their best to fight it.
Right.
And the states can make create these little committees, so it becomes a little bit more fair, a little bit harder.
Right.
What the Supreme Court is saying here, you just can't say, we're going to create a district for black folks, or we're going to create a district for white folks, or we're going to create a district for Hispanics or even French or what. Like, you can't, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
And you can't do that because it's discriminatory and it's a race-based decision. Now, people are up in arms against it, but I think this is I think this is going to have huge impact on voting districts, but it may not have the impact either way that everybody thinks it will.
Yeah.
Because
for all kinds of good reasons.
For all kinds of good reasons. Just because you're black doesn't mean you vote for Democrats, and just because you're white, it doesn't mean you vote for Republican. Like, it's a little bit elementary foolish.
Yeah, the proponents of gerrymandering on the basis of race build into their thesis that we are a racist society. It's presumed that people of a certain color, as you say, Steve, are going to vote certain ways because they're inherently biased, like they can't help themselves. And there is some really good data that refutes that.
Yeah.
So there's 52, I think I heard a Wall Street Journal analyst say, there are 52 majority, you know, the U.S. Census data, majority white districts that have black congresspeople.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if they were inherently racist, why are they electing black congressmen and congresswomen?
Because we're just
not the Ku Klux Klan country.
It just presupposes absurd that if you're white, you're not going to vote for a black person, and vice versa. It just doesn't make any sense.
And we elected Obama twice. The country did.
Well, and then the people espousing against this or coming out against this, there's like black congressmen. It's like, look, you got elected. And I'm not saying it's because you were raised. I hope you got elected because you're the best candidate. That's what we want.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Right.
So look, if people are racist and they're voting in racist ways, well, then shame on you. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But the Supreme Court's saying, look, you can't just expressly draw plans based on race.
Yeah.
That's all it says. And I don't think it's going to have the kind of impact that either side wants. I think it's going to be, first of all, I think it's still going to go on. They just won't express that it's based on race.
Yeah.
And then it'll be incumbent upon the challenging side to say, no, it has to be race because, and prove it.
Yeah.
So I think it's still going to go on. And I think even if it doesn't go on, people might be surprised how little impact this has.
Yeah. Just like the race-based scholarships and law school and medical school enrollments are being challenged even after the Supreme Court decision knocking those down. You know, like you say, admissions committees are still probably somehow figuring out ways to get their pet, you know, philosophy ensconced at Ohio State or Yale or Harvard or wherever. And so, yeah, it takes a while. I think you're exactly right. My big problem with anything to do with race is I disagree with the census even asking the race of people. I just, to me, in fact, when I'm presented with my own census questionnaire, I refuse to answer that question. And I'm probably in some way, you know, upsetting some statistics somewhere. But I think increasingly a number of people are just don't want to play that game anymore. They don't want to fill out on an application or a questionnaire what race they are. And some of it comes down to the fact that we're increasingly a melange or mixed race society where it kind of doesn't matter. And I was kind of hoping Obama's presidency would drive that home, he being half white and half black by ethnicity. And I was kind of hoping that the lesson drawn by people would be, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you like Obama, you like him for his policies. If you dislike him, it's about his policies. But if he's neither fully white nor fully black, then what is he? He's a human being. That's what he is. Why are we talking about his blackness or his whiteness, except, you know, for things about like, oh, I grew up in this kind of a household. Well, that's interesting. That's in his biography. But why would I put that in a census form and track who's black, who's white? Because, Steve, I think it's increasingly difficult for people to even say what race they are.
Well, and as years go by, that will continue to be the case.
Yeah.
I argued with somebody one time. And it might have been the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't remember what prize it was. Pulitzer Prize. Some, one of those kind of things. And a woman had won it. And this is going back a few years. And it was just getting this celebration, like a woman. And it made me think, the first thought that came to my mind is this person won because she's a woman.
Yeah.
Not because she deserved it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying she didn't deserve it.
Right. But that's terrible that the thought
hit my mind. Yeah. And I was arguing with a dear friend of mine. And I just said, do you care that it's a woman? And she, of course, did. She's like, oh, yeah. And you know, she was, you could tell it. Upset her that I didn't give a rat's behind whether a man or a woman won this prize. I really don't care. I'm curious what they did to earn the prize.
Right.
But I really didn't care until it got celebrated. And then I got to thinking, you know what? That just, it puts a stink over the whole mess.
It does. Right.
Puts a stink over the mess.
Right.
Like you elected this person because it's a woman, or you chose this person because it's a woman. Kamala Harris got chosen because expressly Biden said, I'm going to choose a black woman.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's why he chose her, but it stinks like he did.
Yeah.
And
I can't wait for the post-racial America. And you know, this Artemis II mission that just happened, right? Mm-hmm. Where you had a Canadian was on board. One of the crew was a female. One of the crew was African-American. But they didn't really, like, because those things had already happened before. It wasn't like the first woman.
Yeah, I didn't care that there was a woman in space. I could care less.
About the guy was black or not.
I could care less.
And you know what? They really didn't talk about that.
They didn't.
And I was relieved. I was just like, this guy must be a badass astronaut to get assigned to that mission. I don't care if he's black or white.
But I you know, on the other hand.
And he was terrific.
It's worth bouncing the ball around about this for a second.
Yeah.
I can get my head around the fact that there was a time that it mattered. You know,
I can too. Yes.
You know, it's like,
of course,
if a black man or a woman or whoever, pick your poison.
Sure.
Wasn't permitted by law, by some Jim Crow law to do something or to be involved or have the credit or do whatever.
Right.
And, you know, I know
that's why Thurgood Marshall on the Supreme Court was such a big deal.
Yeah.
The first black Supreme Court justice.
But then at some point, things go too far.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, you're going to say they haven't gone too far yet. I get it. I mean, look.
Yeah, that's some people's opinion.
Yeah, I get it. Right. I get it. But it does lend a stink to it. I mean.
It does.
I celebrate anybody who achieves based on what they did.
Their merit.
I could care less.
Right.
What's between your legs.
Right.
Or the color of your melatonin.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's one thing about the military that has always kind of led the way on these kinds of issues is because, you know, you're green, you're not black, you're not white, you're not male or female, you're just green. And can you lift this artillery shell and hump it 20 yards over to where it's being fired? Yes or no? Can you do that?
Yep.
And it's just merit-based. If you can't do it, you can't have that job. You can't hump the ammo. You can't have that job. what's okay, the next job, you're a pilot or you're a SEAL or you're a whatever you are, whatever the job, whatever your MOS is, you're a tank mechanic, whatever. You've got to be able to do that job or else you can't have that job. Yep. And, you know, I like how we're getting back to the basic functions of things like fire departments, police departments, the military. There's this idea where, okay, we let 7,000 homes burn down in LA because we have an incompetent fire department. At, you know, and this guy who's running for mayor out there is like, we got to get people who can do the job here, who understand you have to have reservoirs filled, the trucks need to be maintained so that they're ready to go. You don't appoint an assistant battalion chief because she's a lesbian and she fits this DEI criteria. It has to be a man or woman who knows the job.
And you can appoint the assistant woman who happens to be a lesbian.
If she knows the job.
I don't care.
That's right.
But if she's capable of doing the job.
But if that's all, yeah. You know,
if the only criteria is what's between your legs, who you sleep with, or what color you are, then I think that's a problem.
Yeah. And we got to get post that.
And how do we like get over the hump of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think people like Hegseth, whether you like his brashness or not, but I think he points the way.
Troy's over there. So Troy, my son's in the Army. I'm not shy about it, but you know, this did dawn on me when I went to visit him. Nobody cared.
No.
What color they were. Like,
you're green.
Yep. You're green. It's very nice. And when you're enlisted also, you go there, I think white people are like the minority at basic training. It's kind of crazy. It was like the first time in my life where I looked around, I was like, oh, I'm outnumbered. You're like, there's like 300 of you there too. It's like, oh, wow. So yeah, nobody really cares at all. And even older generations, my grandfather was Vietnam vet, and he doesn't, like, for his age, I don't consider him racist at all because, I mean, he served, and yep. You just had to be next to these people, and he's...
It's an interesting thought, though. It's because everybody is equal at that. Everybody has the same obligations, responsibilities, duties, and that's that. Nobody gets an advantage because of one thing or another. You just either earn it or you don't.
Full Metal Jacket, you're all like equally pieces of shit or something like that. Right. <isn't it?
laughs> Right. My son's best friend. I mean, he it didn't even cross his mind to think, is this guy black? Is he white? Is he Hispanic? I mean, it's like yeah. In the Army, he doesn't even come up. And in fact, that was true of his high school and grade school existence too.
That's great. And that's where our society needs to go.
Yeah.
And I think historically, you know, desegregation, really the earliest way that it started to happen was via the military.
Yeah.
You know, Eleanor Roosevelt, somebody that, you know, like I probably disagree with 99%, but when she had the Tuskegee Airmen take her up in an airplane, right? This is the white first lady being piloted in a military aircraft by a black pilot during World War II as her way of saying, hey, these guys want to fight the Nazis and the
Japanese. Going with them, right?
Why are they here in Lockbourne Air Force Base here in Columbia? Why are they just dithering when we have these shortage of pilots and you won't deploy these black pilots who are just as good or better?
Now, look, this is not to deny that racism occurred.
Oh, it occurred. And that's
well, it has
an example.
And continues, right? People
sure
are racist.
Does.
You're going to find sure. Racist. Right. Assholes. You're going to find people right. Who are.
Sure.
In,
of all colors,
of
by
all
way.
Colors, right. Both ways, all ways, round and a horn. You're going to find
right.
That. The question is, what do you do about it? And, you know, if what I don't like is when people say, there's racism out there, so give me all the power in the world and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
Or there's racism out there, so we need to burn our country down and start over. We need to, quote, fundamentally yeah. Change our country.
1619, we're founded on racism.
Yeah, it's
know.
Like, so I'm always leery of those who would say, who point out these existential threats that they can't really, like, define and say where, and then say, give me all the power and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
Now, if there's individual racism, it's bad. I'll rail against it with you. But it doesn't mean that we got it. I guess it doesn't mean we fundamentally changed our country to try to fix it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we don't try to fix it, but that's not the way.
Well, and in this 250th year of the Declaration of Independence, right? People who, the 1619 people who argue that we were founded, you know, as a racist country, you know, because the Dutch and the British brought slaves over and all that stuff. Okay. all of the historical stuff is there, and it's undeniable, and nobody want, at least I don't want to deny it. It's fact. It's part of the history. But what's also part of the history is if you read the Declaration of Independence, the TNT to blow up racism and to blow up segregation was built in to the Declaration of Independence.
It was, yes.
By the very people who even owned slaves themselves, realized all men are created equal. It's right there. And the question is, what's a man? Who are men? Well, they clearly knew that these black imported slaves from Africa were men. They knew that.
And it
and yet they wrote that in the Constitution. They didn't say all white men. It said all men.
And you know, these guys, and the irony of all of it is that some of those who wrote it owned slaves.
That's right.
Jefferson. Right?
Washington, you know,
you know, even like if you go back,
well, Washington, right? But you know what I mean. Yeah, he was a founding father,
right? But if you go back, and it's like I always say, look, these guys did not found the country on slavery. They founded the country despite of slavery.
That's right.
And I think I can't remember the exact quote, but it's in the dialogue between towards the end of their lives between Jefferson and Adams.
Oh yeah,
they both died on the same day, the 4th of July.
Yeah,
right. I mean, really. You know, if you don't believe in God, go read that. It's really incredible. And they hated each other in real life in their younger days.
Yeah.
I mean, they were at each other's throats.
Yeah. But didn't the one guy, as he's passing away, say Adams or Jefferson? The one guy
Thomas
said about
survives
the,
me.
They
right.
still, they, ah, oh, that bastard still is alive. Yeah. You know.
But there's, in one of those letters I recall reading, and I'm sure the historians will check me if I'm wrong, but it was something like, I only regret that we kicked this to the next generation, meaning slavery, to deal with. They wanted to deal with it, but the problem, and when I say despite slavery, we wouldn't have been able to found the country.
Couldn't have brought the 13 together.
We wouldn't have brought them all together.
That's right.
That's how strongly it was divided, then.
Even then.
And those who wanted to get rid of slavery had to compromise and say, okay. But like you said, they put into the pudding the dynamite that was later going to blow it up.
Yeah. I mean, the first things first, right? Before we can liberate these colonial made slaves, right? We have to become independent of the king. Yeah. So that's the first job.
And then we somehow have to make it so those of us who disagree can get enough control to get rid of it peacefully. And it turns out they couldn't get rid of it peacefully. But
Hence the 2/3 of a man.
That's right.
And which people don't understand. They're not saying black people are only 2/3 worth what a white. That's clearly not what they.
No,
what they were doing was reducing the congressional representation of the southern states,
so they could get rid of it.
Because,
and you know, you could make an argument that, or the argument that people make is our country is founded on slavery. It's rotten to the root. We need to just destroy it and burn it all down. But if you go back and look at the history, you can make a better argument that we wouldn't have gotten rid of slavery so soon, but for the founding of the country that still included slavery, because we lit the fuse that eventually got rid of it, and 600,000 men died, 300 each on each side.
Yeah.
As my buddy likes to say, only 300,000 people died to save slavery. I was like, yeah, you know, now, you know, there's a lot of death as because of that war, and here we are.
Well, 30 seconds on that 2/3 thing, because it always confuses people. But when your congressional representation in Congress, the number of congresspersons that you have back then, congressmen, I can say, before women had the franchise. So back then, if you count the number, if you determine the number of congressmen representing a state based on population, it's a built-in contradiction that the South wanted blacks to be counted, okay, as people, okay? So they wanted... If a man had 100 blacks slaves on his plantation, he wanted all 100 counted towards the congressional representation of, say, South Carolina, right? But yet he wanted to deny that those were really people.
Right.
So it's a built-in contradiction. And what they did in the Constitution is said, well, only, okay, you can count your slaves to try to big up your congressional delegation, but you can only count 2/3 of them. Okay, it was a way of the North diminishing the amount of power by slave states.
Right.
And for people not to understand that and to distort that into, oh, that's the white old men founding fathers trying to say that black people are only worth 2/3.
Right.
Oh, my God. It's a complete misunderstanding.
They were worth 2/3 for purposes of representation so they could diminish the power of those who
exactly.
were still proponents of slavery.
Exactly.
That's what was going on.
And
look, the whole thing is abhorrent. Slavery was abhorrent. Look, we get it.
Yeah.
But you at least got to read the history accurately.
Right, right.
So,
primary day. I just want to grump. Let me get my grump out of the way. The loser of the week for me, in the loser for the last year, is Dave Yost, who I think is a pretty darn good attorney general. I think he's done a good job. And he was really good as auditor. And one of my pet peeves is, of course, that this Jobs Ohio entity that runs the Department of Liquor Control and has this secret budget and secret, you know, employees and secret benefits to try to entice people to come to Ohio and start businesses. Dave Yost wanted to audit that because it's outrageous. It was created when John Kasich was governor. Now John Kasich has rejected Jobs Ohio in some of his podcasts and his posts on social media. And he was governor who signed it into law. So I like Dave Yost. And we were denied him as a candidate. He took himself out of the running, but he was going to run against Vivek Ramaswamy for governor for the Republican nomination. And when President Trump dropped or whatever, Vivek quit Doge and became a candidate for governor, Trump almost immediately endorsed him. And that was over a year before our primary.
Yeah, and Vivek was running around. I mean, Vivek was on stage, you know, debating Trump at one point.
Yeah.
And he was running around with Charlie Kirk. I mean, he was in that circle.
Yes.
So he somehow got the
I wish Trump had not done that because I think Republican voters needed an alternative, a credible alternative. Now, there's two other. There's Casey Putsch, and then there's that lady who lost from Cleveland, the Republican lady from Cleveland who lost her running mate. So the Ohio Supreme Court turned down her petition to restore her to the ballot this week. So really, there's only two Republican slates to vote for, and there's only one Democrat, Amy Acton, and her running mate. And Ohio is less for that. We needed that choice. And why did we need the choice? We needed it because we never got that debate between Dave Yost and Vivek Ramaswamy. We never had the League of Women Voters or whoever.
This is the same
beef. So we don't know what he stands for, Steve.
This is the same beef that people had when Biden dropped out.
Yes.
On the other side.
Yes.
When you ordain somebody,
yeah.
You lose. It's not just that that person gets the advantage because they just got chosen.
Yeah.
It is that the you make a great point. It's that the public was deprived of the open forum of debate and discussion on the issues.
Yes.
Not just to hear what the candidates have to say about them and their opinions, because when you hear that kind of debate, then it helps you reach your own conclusions. You have a good point there, Norm. It happens to me every week here. You got a good point there. I got to go back and ruminate
sure.
on that for a while.
Me too.
And
yeah.
think about it and say, yeah. all right, well, maybe Norm's onto something there. Maybe I'll change my tack a little bit.
Or
look into it or do some research. And so public debate doesn't just smoke out or doesn't just, it's not about winning or losing. It is about educating the public listening to the debate. Troy, it's not unlike law school. It's not unlike the Socratic. I mean, you learn in law school by sitting back, hopefully not doodling on your legal pad, and instead listening to the professor and some student go at it back, or two students go at it.
The dream is two students, but realistically, the professors usually run the show. You try to give your best shot.
And you know where else this comes up? You know where else this comes up in my life every day? Not every day, but
kitchen table.
No. This comes up every time I pick a jury.
Oh,
so we did a focus group recently, and part of the idea of what we do. I'm not going to dig into it, but when I get the focus group to a point where I can just sit back and listen. So this participant saying one thing, that participant saying another, and people arguing, I learn the most. about the case.
Can you do that in voir dire? Can you have jurors talk to each other, or is it just...
If you're good, you can.
Really?
So sometimes that happens. It depends on the forum. It depends on the judge. Depends on the lawyer.
Wow.
But my favorite thing is, all right, Norm, you said over here that you've got a gun in your house, and Mrs. Jones over here said she hates guns. How do we square that? Anybody have any kind? Then someone said, raise your hand. So what do you think? And then they start
kidding.
Talking. And
okay.
That's when you learn the most.
And they're not directly answering you. They're having like a discussion because you opened up the floor.
Facilitated it, right.
The weirdest thing I ever got asked, I was only, I think, I'm trying to think. Yeah, okay. I got called to jury duty several times, but the only time I went to trial and went through voir dire and then on to a trial, I got asked, do I believe that UFOs, and I always find this odd, quote, are real, unquote. And that I just was like, why would a lawyer ask me that to decide whether, I guess he was waiting for me to say, well, yeah, I was abducted myself. And then he might say, Mr. Murdoch, you're excused.
We're jumping into my realm now, but there's an old thing. Like lawyers a lot, oftentimes fill time in voir dire. They look for something just to keep it going or keep it fun. But there's an old bird. His name was Irving Younger, and he had the Ten Commandments on cross-examination. He was a brilliant continuing legal education speaker. I don't know how good he was as a trial lawyer. I hear tell he wasn't. But, you know, he has one thing I never forgotten in my life and in the courtroom. If you're talking and you don't know why you're saying it, then you're probably screwing up.
I like that.
So if you're just filling space and you don't really know why you even need to fill this, you're probably screwing up. But anyway, what do we got?
Well, so today's primary in Ohio, by the way, 6:30 to 7:30. I don't know if this will publish in time for this afternoon, but if you catch this show and you haven't voted yet and it's before 7:30, you still have time. Big races. So in Ohio, besides the governor and the lieutenant governor, we're going to decide who's the attorney general. Who are the candidates for attorney general, secretary of state, auditor, state treasurer, and two Ohio Supreme Court justices. So, like, this is huge. And also one U.S. senator. All the congressmen are up for election this fall. All of the state representatives in Ohio are up for re-election or election this fall. It's disappointing to me, and I imagine you'll see this in Pickaway County, Steve. But in Licking County, where I live, I'm always upset to see this. When a party, and I'm sure it's true in Franklin County as well, where it's mainly Democrat. But out in my county, there were two Fifth District Court of Appeals in Ohio and the Court of Common Pleas for Licking County. No Democratic candidate. Nobody even bothered. You know, to just put their name on the ballot. And I think you should, like, what's going on?
For all the same reasons we've been talking about, right?
And also alternatives. Like, if the Republican candidate were to die before the election or something, right? Well, then there's no candidate. Like, somebody's just going to pick them. The governor just, you know.
We've gotten a little complacent, perhaps.
It bothers me. Like,
I get it.
Yeah, there should be. If I go vote,
seems like maybe
I want a full palette of choices.
Seems like maybe you ought to run for something.
I wonder.
Troy over there can run for something.
You know, at one point you could run for. You could run to be a judge without even being an attorney. Now I think that's gone. But I think at one point
you can't do that now.
No, but you did not even need a degree.
Yeah, that's a non-starter now.
So. Yeah, non-starter. Well. And then there's miscellaneous sales tax issues on the ballot. I know that transit and some other, at least in my county, and I'm sure all across the state. So people, you know, if you'd like to complain on social media about how lousy the government is, I mean, this is part of the deal. You got to go vote.
Yeah.
Ohio has no minimum requirements for years served before becoming a judge.
But you have to be a lawyer.
You have to be a lawyer.
Right.
That's a little trickier, you know?
So 10 minutes after...
Yeah, I could pass the bar and drop my name. Ticket.
You might win.
Could pick a county. I mean, look, you could probably find some small county. I don't know.
Yeah. It seems like... I'm going to say something bad, but... It seems like I've seen some judges in action, and I've often wondered if they ever practiced a day of law, because they seem to make their decisions based on like emotion, or I can't figure out some of the judges and why they, like this guy in D.C., Zia.
Yeah, for when to,
what the, yeah, yeah, crazy, Faruqi.
Faruqi.
Yeah, he's yeah. upset because this Cole Thomas Allen guy who, you know, evidently was trying to kill Trump at the White House Correspondents' Dinner was on suicide watch. Well, I think that, isn't that like a, isn't that something you do when you care about somebody? Like, he's on suicide watch because they don't want him to kill himself.
Look,
and the judges apologized to him and said, we shouldn't have had you on suicide.
Suicide, look, I've never been in jail.
Yet.
and you know, I think I've passed my prime years.
Opportunities.
Where something like that might happen. This comes up a lot. I've had clients in protective custody.
Okay. Padded rooms, that kind of stuff.
Well, meaning I had one client who was a police officer.
Oh, that kind of custody.
And he was wrongfully accused of something and he had to go to prison for a while. We're fixing it. But, you know, he had to be in protect. That means he's sort of in isolation.
Yeah.
I've had others who are on suicide watch and they have to wear the infamous pickle suit. It's like this thing, where, you know, it's very constraining. So I get it. The question would be not whether that individual is on suicide watch. The question is, should that be individual on suicide watch?
Hmm.
And if this judge would have said, tell me what's going on. Why is this individual? And maybe this happened and it wasn't reported. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I would want to see a report and say, if I'm really concerned about it, I'm a judge. I would say, I would like to know what's going on that this person is in protective custody or suicide watch or in a padded cell or suffering, whatever. Because look, it sucks. Jail sucks.
Yeah. Sure.
It sucks.
Yeah.
And it's, if somebody's now, and if this,
my understanding is though, Steve, just interrupt for a second. Jail is not, until you're convicted, when you're just being held, it's not supposed to be punitive, right? Because you're not being punished. You're just being held.
That's right.
But once you're found guilty, then it is punitive.
Then it's punitive. But that's, you know, they both suck. Jail's jail.
Yeah.
But I would want to know. I would want to know, what's the criteria? Are you treating this individual any differently than you did the other? And I know this judge was talking about, we didn't even treat our January 6th people that way. I'll bet you some of them were. I'll bet you those on suicide watch were.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you there were some on suicide watch.
Yeah.
So look, I would want to know. And these are valid questions. And if somebody's being targeted because he was a would-be presidential assassin and treated differently, that would piss me off as a judge. But if the jailer said, look, here's what's going on. We had a credible suicide threat out of this individual. We're concerned for their safety. Yeah. I think judges, by and large, and I would too, sort of have to defer to the jailers at that point.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are in loco parentes. That's not the right word, but they're the ones responsible.
Yeah.
For it. Yeah.
And wouldn't, yeah, they would have like, some kind of duty. And I guess as a judge, I would tend to err on the side of protecting the person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if a guy's written a manifesto where, like, you know, this is the big thing he wants to do with his life.
Or if there's other people in jail that want to kill him. So look, if this is an individual that tried to kill Obama and the rest of the people in the jail were in favor of Obama, would have to isolate that person. Otherwise, the other inmates would kill him.
Big
or it could
time.
Be vice versa.
Well, like Jack Ruby, he became famous because he killed Oswald, right? You know,
he became famous because the CIA paid him to go.
Here we go. Oliver Stone. Right. Thank you. Right. Okay.
Right. You can't tell me there's not some fish.
A Gordian knot inside.
Because a mobbed up strip club owner really cared about Kennedy's death. He was so incensed that Oswald killed his president that he's going to go do justice on his own.
Well, that's the story, folks. Apparently.
Norm is sticking to it.
Well, you know. Yeah, so we don't have Oswald or Ruby to ask anymore.
That's right.
You know, so my winner of the week is got to be Scott Bessent, the Secretary of the Treasury. He is in charge of Trump's economic fury. And I just have to say, the most beautiful move that I heard last week is somehow, and I thought this was uncrackable, and I don't know enough about Bitcoin to really understand, but somehow the United States Treasury was able to figure out what Bitcoin batch or string or whatever they call that, you know, that string of numbers that, you know, they figured out where $500 million of the Ayatollah's and Mullah's retirement money went in Bitcoin, and the U.S. Treasury froze it. I mean, the amount of screwing with Iran, right, economically, dude, it is off. Those people are so done.
Yeah.
They're so done. Now, I wish we militarily we had not stopped, because I think it'd all be over by now. But I do understand Trump was trying to pay a little. He was trying to calm his critics and say, okay, now let's see if we can have peace. Let's negotiate. Let's give peace a chance. John Lennon, you know, let's give peace a chance. I get that, but
end this mess.
We should have just kept going.
Yeah, just end the mess. Troy, what you got? What's good and bad in your world?
Bad side. I'm a big Poly Markets guy right now.
Ooh,
it's looking like this week there was a change. Democrats are now looking like they're going to win the governor, Amy, whatever her name
is. Amy Acton.
Is that right?
Yeah, she's a
tough acting, Amy Acton.
Yeah, she's a 53% chance to win, 46% for Republicans. That was kind of a low.
Of course, they said that about Hillary.
No, Poly Markets didn't have Hillary winning.
What?
Poly Markets never been wrong.
Really?
They change.
So okay. Okay, man.
Change.
I mean, the polls said that, but yeah, you're
polls.
Right.
Polls and Poly Markets are
two different things. Worlds.
Polls are just
Amy Acton, man. I got to tell you. Well, she had that. She saved some guy's life. I wonder if, like, they're saying Trump's assassination was staged.
Oh my God!
Her assassination attempt was staged.
Yeah.
Right. But, to Curry, maybe Amy Acton's life-saving endeavor. Like, can you imagine if somebody were claiming that?
Yeah.
But good for her, man. She saved some guy having a heart attack or something.
So that was.
Is there a doctor in the house? Well, it turns out I am.
I could see that, and also at the same time, Vivek, I guess, made some wild statements like the next day, because it's like, okay, somebody should blame Vivek. Like, she's doing really, really good right now. Just try to play it cool, and you know, I guess he was making some wild statements about religion, about Ohio in general, and it got all calm video. I remember seeing it, and I was like, these are not good things to be happening at the same time.
Yep,
you should just lock it in real quick, man. But there's a lot of time still. But
we'll get Vivek in for a show, maybe.
Yeah, Vivek's an interesting guy. He has a little bit of a problem where, and I get this, anybody with a big ego has a problem saying they were ever wrong. But his statements, what was it, like a year ago, about the H-1Bs, that you know, Ohio has a lot of dumb people, and we really need more Indians in here with H-1Bs. Essentially, what he said is that like, we're not graduating in enough good native Ohio students, and we need the H-1B program. And of course, man, that just lit. I mean, you talk about MAGA just like regurgitated over that. And it's like, Vivek, you're running for governor of Ohio, not governor of Delhi, India, for God's sake. Yeah, so he has and he's never apologized. He just keeps trying to justify that original statement. And you're right, Troy. Sometimes you just keep your mouth shut and let things go by instead of amping up what she said. Now it's a bigger deal than it would have been.
So what's, you got something good?
I don't know. Steve's birthday is today. I don't know if that was said on the show. No. So we could all sing happy birthday to him real quick. You know,
I'm not.
Sing it in your heads.
Sing it in your, I don't think I can croon a happy birthday to Steve right now.
Well, look, good and bad here. Troy had his last meeting for law school. He's officially got he officially is a law school graduate. Now he's got to take the bar exam. So.
Okay.
Super easy. Heard the pass rates are just, it's a walk in the park.
Like a pop quiz. Simple.
What is the pass rate? I have no idea what it is.
I think at Capital University, I want to say it's like 73%, which is where I go.
Okay.
That's for first time takers. Now, if you do any post bar program, which I have Themis for all fellow law students out there, if I complete the entire program, I have a 93% chance of passing.
That's one of those private prep courses.
Yeah, you've dropped like $2,500 on it, and they want you to spend 400 hours on it. So.
Well, this is interesting. So
I've seen the stack of books they send you
in February, which is February. Usually it's the second timers though. For February, the Ohio bar exam, 43% of all test takers passed, with a 65% pass rate for the first-time takers.
Huh.
July exams typically yield higher results, with the July 2025 exam seeing a 72% pass rate and an 80% pass rate for first-timers.
So Capital's 73% is right in there.
That's good. When I came through, yeah. it wasn't that high.
Are you going to shoot for July or...
Yeah, I take it in July, and I hope to never take it again.
Yeah, of course.
I hope to do everything right the first time.
As they say, you don't want to take part two.
Yes.
You don't want to take part two. So anyway, that's my good, bad. And you know what my other good is? I went to my son's college graduation, so hats off to him. But beyond that, all the grad, it just felt good seeing young men and women sort of,
this is the oldest son?
The oldest.
Okay.
Sort of entering the world, you know?
Yeah.
It's like seeing him and his buddies and what they're going to do. And, you know, I remember those days when I sort of packed up my college dorm for the last time and looked around. I was one of the last people to leave the building even. And it was a really eerie feeling, almost anxious feeling.
You knew you were crossing the Rubicon.
It's a huge life-changing event.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Enjoy it. Embrace it. Have some fun, folks.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Congratulations, yeah. Dad. That's big.
And anything bad?
You've had two sons do epic things this past year. So congratulations.
If that didn't happen, then what are we worth?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
You know. All right. Well, look, that's going to wrap us up. This is your weekly dose, Cinco de Mayo dose of Common Sense Ohio. We hope you were chock full of it. So full of it, you can't wait to get more next week. We're coming at you right from the middle.